Welcome to the FASD Success Show. Yeah, hosted by Jeff Noble. Let's go. It's a podcast where we dive deep into stories of success, oh so sweet. Every episode we're grooving to the beat, interviewing guests who can't be beat, sharing the journeys, the highs and lows, finding inspiration wherever it goes. Yeah, the FASD Success Show, taking it high, celebrating victories, reaching for the sky, with Jeff Noble as your host. It's a show in, get ready to dance and let the good vibes in.
Welcome. That was pretty cool. Just a little new intro song. Don't know if we'll keep it. You can let me know. Hit me up, jeff@fasdsuccess.com. Pump it or dump it. I think I'm stealing somebody's terminology from a radio show and or breastfeeding class. I'm not sure. But let me know. I thought it was pretty fun. In today's episode, we're unpacking Kim Driscoll's incredible journey, one that many of you will nod along to. Knowing the ups and downs all too well, Kim takes us on a tour from navigating the tough decisions in FASD care to stepping up to really being a powerhouse in the FASD advocacy scene. It's a straight shooting look at how a caregiver, just like many of us, flipped the script from overwhelming challenges to proactive change, all while handling the everyday grind of FASD life. In this episode, Kim doesn't hold back on the heartfelt choices and pivotal shifts that led her to advocate so fiercely, turning her family's struggles into a giant wave of support for others in the trenches. We're also going to dive into hands-on strategies and insights Kim has mastered. So if you're at a crossroads or just hunting for some actionable day-to-day FASD advice, this episode's right up your alley, my dudes. So come as we draw inspiration from Kim's empowering story and snatch up all those tools, you know, that we need to forge our own path to success in the FASD world. Because at the end of the day, my guys, that's what this show is all about. It's all about FASD success. It is all about finding the most charismatic curators in the FASD scene so we can get some insight tips. How are they thinking? Actionable strategies. Why are they thinking that? And then how can I think like that? How can I do that? And then not only can you create success for yourself, and then it's going to trickle down and have success on your loved ones on the spectrum. So we didn't put a podcast out last week, so if you're wondering what the heck, all good in the hood. It was a long week. We had a lot going on, and I just wanted to hang out with my family. That's what was up. I wanted to hang out with my daughter, and it was cool. And this weekend, in fact, she got to see me play ice hockey for the first time, so that's always special, you know. And a big shout out for mom, you know, Tara, because Olivia only could pay attention for like the first 5 minutes, which is cool, because anybody ever watch adult rec men's league hockey? It's not the most enjoyable regardless. Anywho, I'm just chatting with you, just telling you what's up. So we did miss this past week, but we're here right now, my dudes, and that's all that matters. Cool. And so before we get into it, of course, we have to get the official business out of the way. And what do I mean by official business? I mean by, like, listen, if this is your first episode with us, welcome. This is your 152nd episode. Awesome. The biggest enemy to caring for an individual / individuals with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is isolation. Isolation is the enemy. We tend to lose friends, lose family. We don't bother to even wanting to go to friends and family because the next person who tells us that we're enabling or taking it too easy, we just want to give them a throat flick. And so, you know, isolation. And then when you're isolated, you start having to regulate your own thoughts, feelings, and emotions. But when everybody is telling you that you're doing a bad job, and the individuals you're trying to help are telling you you're having a bad job, I don't care who you are, that is going to be tough. So you need community. So I am suggesting, if you have not already, we have a free private Facebook group. You can find it at facebook.com/groups/FASD forever. That's where you'll find us. There's over 7,000 caregivers, so jump in. You do not have to do this alone anymore. There's lots of awesome conversations. I bet you there's a question that we've already seen 100 times, so bring it, learn about it, and do it together, okay? Also, any resources that we mentioned here in the interview in the podcast, you can find it at our website, fasdsuccess.com/podcast, and you can scroll. We have, again, 152 episodes with a blog post attached to each and every single one, so we really appreciate that. And last but not least, the show is picking up steam and momentum, and if you have become a new listener and you said, this guy, this kooky guy, let's hear what he has to say. His guests are great, even if he's not. So all good. If you could subscribe to the show, that helps us because it tells all the beep boops in the back end that our show is cool and that you are cool. And so it suggests it to people who are looking for that FASD insight. And if you want to be a real bona fide badass, if you left us a review, I would love you. Because that also helps too. Oh, hey! Okay, cool. Thank you so much for that, my guys. So who are we talking to today? I'll tell you. We're talking to a through and through blue Maritimer, and she is awesome. She's an alumni of our Caregiver Kickstart online coaching course, but she's so much more than that. Kim is a mother to a child with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and an adoption worker. She embodies the spirit of advocacy and deep-seated care. Her journey into the world of FASD started with her son's adoption, sparking a passion for advocacy and support within this challenging landscape. So her professional background in child and family services has been shaped by her personal experience, driving her to make a significant impact in educating, supporting, and empowering others navigating this journey. Her role at the New Brunswick Adoption Foundation, Kim leverages her insights and experiences to create a supportive network, providing guidance and resources to families and individuals affected by FASD. Her dedication not only shines in her professional endeavors, my dudes, but she is a nice lady and she's fun to talk to, and you're going to learn a lot. I will be back on the other side of the interview so we can do a wrap up. I'm ready. You're ready. All right, let's go. Hey folks, look at this. Here I am. For those watching, perhaps often listening, I am here with my good buddy, Kim Driscoll. Kim, thanks for joining me, pal.
Thanks for having me.
Listen, what did you think of the conference?
I loved it.
What did you love about it? Because this is new, right? Like kind of the momentum in having these events.
Yes, it is. Really, like I have to say, your energy when you came, and especially where you came and you're the first speaker,
yeah,
it really pumped us up for the day.
Yeah.
You need that energy. And where I'm wearing
Yes.
And where I'm wearing two hats because I'm an adoptive mom of a child with FASD.
Yeah.
But I work for the New Brunswick Adoption Foundation. So it can be emotional listening to other people's journeys and stories, but I find it empowering.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Like not alone.
Yes.
Because often you felt that way.
Isolation is huge when you have a child with FASD.
Biggest enemy.
Yes.
And this means so much to you that it was your kiddo's 13th birthday. No. Because it does mean so much to you. And it's not like, no one's going to be like, hey, you left your kid on his birthday? No, there would be a million parents that would sign up for the respite, right? And this is important to you because you're going to tell your story and then people will see how dedicated you are to this.
Yes, and we prepared for 2.5 weeks.
Tell us that and then we'll rewind to the prologue.
Okay, so it was my son's 13th birthday. He couldn't imagine. He was like, Mom, I'm going to wake up and you wouldn't meet me when I'm 13. I met him at 5.5. So I prepared for 2.5 weeks. I asked him, what did he need from me, you know, to make him feel secure with that day that I wouldn't be there. And so we agreed on 13 kisses and 13 hugs and 13 times being told happy birthday. And I do have a touching story about my necklace that I wear every time that I do anything with FASD. The day that I found out that he was diagnosed with FASD, it was over the phone, and it was actually with Dr. McInerney that was speaking yesterday. And I rented a hotel room because I knew this news was going to make me emotional, and I just wanted my time. Even though I knew that my husband and my family have to process it also. I want to be alone the day I found out and process it. So I walked into the hotel room, went to the gift shop, and I immediately saw this necklace with a big heart on it. And I thought, I'm going to love him through it. And I just, the necklace spoke to me. And now every time I do anything with FASD and awareness, I wear the necklace because that was the day that I found out my son has FASD.
Dude, that was a great intro, man. Oh, so sweet. It is sweet. Now people are going to, if you're listening to this, go to our blog, fasdsuccess.com/podcast. If you're listening, you're going to be like, no, I want to see what that necklace is. Yes. We'll take a picture of it and we'll put it up there. So let's start all the way back, because not only are you a mom, you work in the adoption space.
Yes.
You're a Caregiver Kickstart alumni.
Yes, I am.
It's me, shameless self-promotion. But you are. Yeah. Yes, and, I am. And you're doing a lot of great things, and I want to get on that. But let's do the rewind, okay? And give us that journey of picking up your boy, because did you know prior to adoption that he was on the spectrum? Or okay, so typical, right? So just give us a little bit of picking him up and that sort of
stuff. I love talking about this. We were on the adoption list for approximately 2.5 years. And I have a bio daughter, and at the time she was graduating high school. So we were trying to decide to take her name off the list or not. We want to allow her to have time to attach to the brother or sister that was going to be coming to us. And we were taking our name off. We decided at the end of June. Well, April came and we got the phone call, and it was actually for respite care. And I said, oh, I run a licensed daycare at the time, and I wasn't interested in providing respite. They said, well, this child is in guardianship. And I immediately said, great, bring him. And we met him for 45 minutes on a Wednesday night. Friday, he walked into my house, walked up the stairs. He had a bag in his hand with his clothes. And he looked at me and he said, Mom, where's my bedroom? When I tell that story, and I do that as a presentation a lot of people go, oh, and it warms their heart.
I went attachment. Right. Oh, yes. Yeah, but we were different, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
and
but what did you think at first?
No.
So you thought, this is weird.
I actually felt a bit devastated. I thought, he has no idea what a mom means and who that is.
That was just the person who he was staying
at. A woman. Every woman. And same as that, my husband was military. He was away at the time. And we called him. And he immediately said, Dad, where are you? And he had, again, never even seen him physically, right?
So alarm bells are just like red flags where you're like...
Red flags for me, because alarm bells, I'm pretty willing to take on anything.
Yeah.
So it definitely was alarm bells where I was like, okay, I learned that we were his 10th home. So, and he had two previous adoptions that both failed. So I knew that, okay, we have a long road ahead of us, and I'm going to prove to him what a mom really does for him and what permanency would be. Because after that weekend, I dropped him off on Sunday. Social workers called me on Monday and said, how did it go? And I said, I want to adopt him. And they're like, oh, okay, it went that good.
Yes.
And
no, they're like, yes, thank you.
Yes. And I was like, unfortunately, they were choosing to split the sibling group up. So he had a full bio brother in care at the time also. But because that child was turning 12, they were going to be considered an older child adoption. They had already had 9 homes together. So they were like, okay, we got to try this differently. So
keeping them together, right?
Yeah.
That's not always the best thing to do, honestly, even for them. And it doesn't mean there's no visits, obviously, but just when I got started too, I thought, I guess I didn't know, but still thought it odd that when Tara started working at the group home, I thought, isn't a group home like group, like multiple? But it, with this agency, there wasn't. There was one kid and 2 staff 24 hours a day.
Yes.
So my boss kind of got it. And this is all the way back in 2009. He, you know, his name is Steve. He kind of was onto it. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, why would they need 2 to?
Yeah, there's reasons. Sometimes they should have more.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So I feel where you're coming from with that. So were you coming from a place of proving people wrong, or just really did your heart say, I want to
prove or be right to this kid? Like, where?
Oh, it's definitely not about proving anyone wrong. It was absolutely to do with my compassion and love for children. But then, of course, once I laid eyes on him and his little smile, and he was so outgoing, and I thought, he's resilient. You know, he just needs the right family that can do this with him. Yeah. And I am that person.
Were you resilient growing up?
Yes, very. Yeah. Right.
That's for another day. But you came through a lot of challenges yourself.
Yes. And I've had 4 miscarriages alone. And my daughter was born with issues also. So that's why they chose me, they said, was because I had fought and advocated for my daughter on many different avenues and platforms. Mm-hmm. So they said, she's going to be the right match.
Even though you had a strenuous, hard challenge and you knew what kind of was coming up, you still?
Absolutely.
Like, oh, clearly you did. That's tough, man. It's okay. So because it's tough, you know, I know there's going to be people listening saying, I want to, and there's nothing wrong with people who are like, no way I could, because it's that hard.
Yes, it is.
And your husband's in the military too. Yes. Was, but at base at home, or was he away?
No, he was away.
So he was even like deployed, right?
Yeah, he wasn't even there when, so we had to actually wait for, so they said, okay, like, we'll sign the papers. And I said, well, my husband hasn't met him yet. I said, not that we're going to say no. I said, but I really, he should meet him.
Before. Oh my gosh. Tara got a dog when I was away. Okay. After I said no, on the road. So I know you're like, I got a kid. Exactly. So good call.
Yeah.
Okay. So how does FASD come in? Like, was there other symptoms? You know, we call them symptoms. If you're new to our podcast, behaviors are symptoms.
Yes.
So when I say behaviors, that's what I mean. What did you see that you were like, this is different?
Well, because I had vast experience with children, I ran a licensed daycare for 10 years, and I had shut down the daycare every 6 months. I would, take away an age group and keep going because the challenges were so severe with my son. So I knew something was different because I'm very consistent. I'm very knowledgeable. I'm very loving and caring.
And
I
had,
So
I do that all the time. I say, I'm handsome and humble. And they're like, keep going. But those are your strengths.
They are my strengths. And I know that.
Yeah.
So,
nothing wrong with that.
Right. So I was willing to try everything and anything. And we had him in counseling. So he was seeing a psychologist. And I worked with the social workers. And I said, it's just not working the way it normally would with a child. Like, I'm providing everything they need, but yet the symptoms of, the behaviors weren't going away.
What sort of, because this is the relatable, because I'm just trying to relate, because there's going to be people listening in their car like you do going,
Yeah. Okay, so there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
What I would call at the time, I called them meltdowns, not dysregulation.
Yeah, yeah.
But so he would have meltdowns over the simplest of things. When I say that I felt like I was Goldilocks with the 3 bears because he ate porridge every single morning for 3 years straight. Jeez. Okay. 3 years straight. Never changed for 3 years. But if it was too warm, he would immediately have a reaction. And he could, whip the bowl across our kitchen island. He'd cry. He'd lay on the floor and he would just sob. Like
extreme reaction to an incident, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, okay, these are very, and he was such an outgoing child at the time. And he was so excitable over everything. It was like he had such highs and lows that I started to think maybe he's bipolar. I didn't know a lot about
there
that.
There's extremes. Yes. Right? Like so awesome and outgoing. But then we also think that because they could do that, that means proficiency in other areas.
Yeah, it literally meant that he was raised in the foster care system. He was 4 months old when he entered the foster care system. He didn't ever go back to his bio family. So that was his way of being resilient and just being open with everybody. But then he didn't form, quote, healthy, proper relationships, right? Relationships. So he also had extreme difficulty with socialization. So the jealousy and the insecurities that he had were huge. If you gave a compliment to another child and you didn't look at him, say the exact, even if he didn't get a haircut, if you said, oh, I like your haircut today. And he'd immediately he felt unloved And I know this because he ended up using these words with me later, as he got older.
As he developed skills to express
the communication with it. So he also had huge issues, and he still does to this day. He has huge issues with hygiene, sensory issues. Brushing his teeth has been crazy.
Like pulling them.
Yes. He would melt down in the bathroom every time we mentioned brushing his teeth. And I would brush them for him. I started to pick up different toothbrushes, electric ones, ones that go in circle. And then I took them to Shoppers Drug Mart. And I said, let's pick out your shampoo, conditioner. Let's smell them all. You know, and you pick out what you want. Face cloths. How do they feel? We did everything. And I was like, there's something else here. School, he was doing okay in school. But they knew of his history, and he has a trauma history, and he had abuse in that history. So they were very careful with him, and they watched him well, and they supported him well. But then he stopped. He literally stopped progressing when it came to academics with reading, writing. So again, we were like, there's way more challenges here than what we thought. So his psychiatrist at the time and his psychologist both said, now, let's get him tested for FASD.
Is this the first time you heard this term, or?
Not the term, but for him.
So you never made the connection?
No.
You know, me neither. My sister, I had written the book, and my sister, my own sister, I had no. And then you're like, how did I miss this? Right. Anyway, so what are some of his strengths? He's outgoing, but like, what else? Like, because that's what it's, that scattered profile, really good at this, awful at this, you know, so the contrast, really, what's going on. But what's he good at?
Football. And I'll say to everybody,
like American football, not soccer.
Yes, just American football.
Mind the audience. Okay. American football, we love UK football too.
That's true. Yeah. We tried him in Beavers, we tried him in soccer, we tried him in skating. He would not ever hear of hockey. His insecurities about himself are enormous, and it changes our life. His anxiety issues are so debilitating now, and they're worse as the older he got. Yeah. He was just so outgoing and friendly at five.
He didn't know better as his brain. Because what we know from Dr. Catherine LaBelle is the FASD brain grows different.
Yes.
Right? And so as he sort of developmentally catches up, that means more insight. Because, you know, that part, and, you know, and the more, you know, it's funny, but the more stability you provide, the more he's able to think. That's why we have to keep them busy, because then they go there. And if there's not a therapy, you know, if we're not going there on purpose, you know, to art therapy, equine, you know, that's tough. Right. And so then it's not the first time you heard it. And then the first time they mention it, and then you go home and do all the research.
Yeah.
And then,
and I would say though, because by then I was working with New Brunswick Adoption Foundation. Yeah. So I have spoken to many participants that, because the rates of FASD are higher in children in care.
So I could get the,
So when you look at it in New Brunswick, even if we go with the conservative 4%, right? Yeah. Which is what people are. That means that there's over 31,000 in New Brunswick alone that have FASD. So I have spoken with participants that talked to me about the challenges with their children, that the ones that were diagnosed with FASD, the ones that were suspected. So when I had him tested, I pretty much knew by then, because I was like, trauma and FASD and ADHD, they have so much that overlaps. So I really thought, like, it was not just, because I don't want to minimize it, but trauma and ADHD. So once I put in that factor, I was like, oh, wait, Kim, like, he's being tested for it. It might be. It worried me more. Didn't make me, like, he was adopted. I'm providing the permanency. But I was thinking, I don't think I have the skill set I need. I need support with this. So then I knew I had to bring in a whole team of people. And
how'd you feel after getting the diagnosis?
He called at 1 o'clock, and I was sitting in the Sobeys parking lot. I could tell you exactly what spot, because I was prepared. But I knew as soon as it was out of his mouth that I started to cry, because I worried about his challenges and what he would face later in the future. So I needed to gather that strength before I saw him physically again. So I went to the hotel. I had my cries. I had time to process, think, and say, okay, you know, it's a title. He's still the same child. But now at least I can have something on paper to go to the professionals and say, I need help. This proves he needs a support team. He needs more than just us. And where, when you don't have a diagnosis, a lot of times the school system doesn't listen to you. You can't get the EAs. You can't have the IBSP plans, et cetera, et cetera. And then I thought, you know what? I run support groups. I'm going to become part of the FASD community and I will get support.
So was it as easy as that? Look at the, here's the evidence. That's what you thought, right? Look at it's on paper. It's right here. So, but what did you run into then? Trying to collect this team, get these resources.
I ran into challenge after challenge, and I just received a phone call 3 days ago from his resource and guidance team, and they're taking away his EA.
So, and are you effing kidding me? Like, you know, here we go again.
I am huge on educating people about FASD because he doesn't have the facial features. As we know, 90% of our children don't.
Yeah.
And because he is verbally
competent.
Yes, yeah, competent. So yeah,
his verbal expression is probably greater than his age.
Yeah, absolutely.
All of the words.
Yeah.
He could probably speak, the social work speak, and the doctor speak, and he could tell the story so fast. And
He'll tell you about his amygdala. He'll put his hand and his fingers up and say, my amygdala's on fire. Like, you know, like
all of the words.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's emotionally, like right now, he's about 6'7".
Yeah.
So I ran into the same issue that I find a lot of people do with children with FASD is that because if they don't have the facial features, it's the invisible disease. They don't believe in the brain damage that is there. And they don't believe that it affects your whole body, right? And because behavior started to come out, I literally had one professional respite care provider from an organization sit down and say to me, how do you know he's not just being a brat? And I was like, I approach everything from a trauma lens and my son's not a brat and I'm sorry, but we're not a match. Yeah. And that was the last shift she ever did with him. So I
like, you're so sweet, but I can see as soon as your wires get crossed, it's like, and the camera pans into your face and you're like, no.
I am a protective mama.
Yeah, yeah.
He is my baby.
How do you keep that down when you're advocating, right? Like, because it's easier when it's not your kid. You know, I always say, they say, Jeff, brilliant idea. Or, I never thought of that. Well, that's because I'm not in the situation. Like emotions cloud judgment, literally your executive function, right?
I find it really easy. And it's because I have such a passion for it. So even though I live this life and if I advocate for others that are going through similar journeys, I find that the calmer you are, the more policy and procedures that you can quote, especially in the school system when you're looking up, like ours is policy 703 Appendix D. if you're in New Brunswick and policy 322, it's an inclusion policy. So I make myself aware of all that. So I have ammunition when I'm going into somewhere.
Smart. Yep.
So that way, when they say, I'm sorry, we can't provide this or this for your son, I'll quote and say, is this not your policy? And is this not law?
Okay. Give me a quick story. Like when you dropped the policy.
Oh, I did.
They do like, what happened?
I literally, he had had challenges and I went through all the proper channels.
He had
an EA and I spoke to his teachers and I went to the guidance resource and I did the vice principal, then the principal. And they suspended him for a sentence for one day. And I could not believe. Well, that set me on fire. So I calmly did a 21 typed page complaint with the policies photocopied, stapled to it, and it went to the district. The district met with me. They read everything, 21 pages. We sat there and they read, and they looked at me and they said, why didn't you come sooner? I said, because I followed all the proper channels.
Because you're like, because you mother... Why
did I have to get to this point? It's not about me not coming sooner. Yeah. It's the fact that the professionals weren't doing their job in the first place.
Yeah.
And I'm advocating. and I'm here.
And you're doing the proper thing. You're not going over heads. So you're respecting their positions, all of that stuff. And I got nowhere. So now that I'm here, and then the fact that you had to go and do like Law and Order shit just to do that. Yeah.
And not everyone has those abilities to do it. A, if you're
they're so overwhelmed by their kids. And the thought of like looking something up is like it's another thing, right?
Working on computers is hard sometimes.
Thinking is hard sometimes with our kids and the amount of duress that we're under, right? That's amazing that you have those skills, really, because you know, and
at the end of the meeting with them, I literally had already put 6 objectives/demands. And I asked for 6 things. By the end of the meeting, those 6 things were implemented.
I love it. Then how did you feel?
Well, I felt empowered for my son because I thought he's finally going to get the treatment, the resources, and the kindness and the understanding that he needs in that environment.
Uh-huh.
Now, that changes every year.
Every year,
the teachers, the grades, you know, so I consistently meet with them in August before school starts. I have a working profile for my son. I'm telling you, his psychologist created this where there's a picture of him and then it says his likes, his dislikes, like his passions, his football, his animals. And then it talks about what works with me and what doesn't work with me. And it's a working profile. So it's constantly changing.
Fluid, right?
Yes, very fluid. So I meet with them and I print it out and we go through everything. And I say, I approach it from a very positive standpoint at the beginning. And then I get into the more difficult, the behaviors you're going to see. The symptoms of FASD are going to come out. He's in like a pressure can in school. Like, you know, to go and be able to function for 6 hours a day with 240 students and, you know.
I know, the yelling, the screaming.
Yeah. Like,
sometimes I'll be contracted to go into a school, what they think is a particularly tough kid. And then I'll be like walking with the principal, the teacher. And I love when the bell rings and I say, now just go against the wall and just listen. And all you hear is. And so I said, now imagine, have you ever had a headache and been in here?
Yeah,
migraine. I said, have you ever had a migraine?
Yes.
You know, and I say that to the person I'm with. Mm-hmm. And I say, now imagine you being a kid with a migraine and you have to listen to that. How well are you going to do work?
And that's why we modified things. Connor gets picked up 15 minutes before all of this happens. So, yes, he has to transition in classrooms, which I can't prevent. Yeah, yeah. But he leaves the classroom 5 minutes before everyone. So the hallways are empty. He gets picked up 15 and he's in grade 7 and he has yet to take the bus since grade 1.
Yeah. Some people aren't bus people.
Yeah.
Is it working?
It is. We still have many challenges. Mm. Connor getting up in the mornings. And again, hygiene is still an issue and trauma can present itself in many different ways. And with his added complexity of FASD, even moving his bowels, his body is so tense and he holds everything in a lot of times.
Sure. Now, imagine how many times he had to clench, you know, as a kid, right?
Yes. So he's actually hospitalized last year for 5 days and it was very serious. And it was because of this. So he still faces many social challenges are getting actually harder and harder because the age difference between his chronological age with his peers compared to his emotional social age is huge. So that gap is getting wider and wider and wider.
And it requires more capacity to manage those higher level relationships. And when you're younger, it's let's go play, hands on, tangible. We're talking pee pee poo poo. We're calling people booger brains, but they're still
there. He still is.
Right. But it's easier when they're there too, you know? And that's the gap does, it can widen. But where have you seen the improvements?
I would say definitely he, with a lot of his sensory issues, it's the repetition, like, you know, with how I prepare the food, how I involve him in preparing my food. I give him only 2 choices, right? So it's him coming, waking up in the morning to that care and that love. I always wake him up by kissing his face and going down to his neck and saying, good morning, buddy, like this. And he literally smiles. He's like when you do it to a baby. And he goes, mama. And he still speaks like that a lot of times. We hug. And then I prepare his clothes the night before.
Yeah.
We have a system and it has to be almost methodical.
Yeah, it's Groundhog Day.
Yes.
And it's boring.
Yes.
But it works.
It does.
You're like, I wish there was a little spike. Like, because once you get things stable, it's boring. Right. And I know people are listening and saying, oh, I would love boring and status quo. Right. But as a human, you know, and you want some variety, but that never works. Our guys need to anticipate, like, but it makes them calm. They know what's coming next.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of things like at home, we have a lot of safeguards, I call them. So he can't, like, if he turns the TV on, it goes to four squares. We have to put a code in. If he tries to look over anything PG-13, it has a code. The shower has a radio in it because he loves music. So it entices him to have his showers.
Yeah, it regulates.
And he's allowed it loud. We prepare for that. We're like, okay.
Vestibular immaturity. So it feels good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, but the big challenges at his age right now, I look forward to the future. Like I look forward all the time.
We're just keeping it real right now, dude.
Yes. And I know that he's going to face enormous challenges. And sometimes when he was younger, we were going through the hardest times. And now I'm like, no, like he doesn't have security in life. Like, what are we gonna, and what if I'm not here? It's
the biggest question.
Yes.
Who's going to look after my kid or what my kid going to do when I die?
Yep. And we've met really, like we call our military family, right? Even though they're not biological. But again, I have an adopted son. You don't have to be biological to be family to me.
I agree. I have brothers and sisters.
Yes. So, but socially, he has burnt all of his bridges in our neighborhood because he's reactive. And he can't stay regulated with many, many things. So one example was he was climbing a little tree two doors down from me. And one of his quote, best friends at the time, they climbed the tree and got higher than him. And he immediately lashed out. And he was like, I hate you. You're dumb. You're stupid. And they were like, oh my goodness. And then he come home. And he's like, I hate them. I'm never talking to them again in my life. And immediately I'm like, okay, I need to be his working brain right now. I need to step in and I need to calm him. So it's my calm tones, it's reassurance, and then it's time. I'll sit on the floor. We have holes in our bedroom walls we have unfortunately got to the point and we call them love holes. So they don't work for everybody. For Connor, they work.
Yeah.
And I think because we've approached it with our psychologist through the lens that it is love why I'm holding you. It's for your safety.
Yeah, it's like the hug machine. Have you ever seen the movie Temple?
No.
Go watch Temple.
No.
It's Temple Grandin, but it's Claire Danes. She plays Temple Grandin. And Temple in college, because she has sensory issues.
Yes.
And she noticed when at the ranch with the livestock, that they squeeze the cow before they go into the paddock because she goes, why do you do that? It calms them. So when she freaks out in class, she made a hug machine. So when she's dysregulated, she'd go into her room, press the button, and it squeezed her. That's what you're doing.
Oh my
goodness. That's what you're doing.
Yes, because it literally
you're co-regulating that.
Yes,
you're not restraining; you're regulating. That's what that is.
Yeah, and the first ones, though, I will say, were hard as like
sure.
He would be crying and screaming, and of course, one of his things is to lash out verbally. So we hear, you know, I hate you. You're not my real mom. I have never, which I know a lot of people do. I've never taken it personally.
Because it's not, you know, it's like my buddy RJ, you know, RJ flying with broken wings, RJ Foreman.
No, don't know.
Him. You know, RJ, do you know the group Flying with Broken Wings?
No.
Oh.
I'm going to learn lots when I get here.
it's run by adults on the spectrum.
Oh,
it's okay. The whole group.
Yeah, I'll be looking that up.
Well, yeah, because now it's another resource.
Yep. You know, yes.
He says something and I quote it often because he also had multiple placements and the lashing out. And he would say, it might be towards you, but it's not about you. And it's something, it's hard because when you love someone And then all of a sudden they're turning around and telling you, go fuck yourself, and you suck, and you're a C word. Even though you're like, I've been on the phone for you for 10 hours today, bud. Like, and so it feels like they're ungrateful, but not taking it personal is so key, because he is literally regulating. And so he's using words instead of the holes in the wall.
Yeah.
So that's where I would all day, every day, you know, that's fine. He's just like, it's like a baseball manager. And they're calm and quiet, and all of a sudden it's game over, and they're cursing and yelling and swearing. It's that's what that is.
But the first times you do it as a parent, it breaks your heart.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, and I have to do that.
I was tearing up as he's down on the floor in front of me. We use a soft couch, etc. I have his arms. He self-harms. So sometimes it takes, now at this age, it takes two of us for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But he, I can tell,
you can feel his body.
I'm the primary person. Like, everyone takes my cues.
Yeah.
So if his sister, who is now 26, and my husband, if they're helping, they look to me for the cues because I know him so well.
Yeah.
I see his shoulders settle. I wiggle his hands. And if they're not tense still, I'm like, hey, buddy, I think you're okay. Mom, and I don't talk much through them. They only get 2 or 3 minutes they last. But I do say, I love you. And I stop, and he's, I hate you. And I wait, and then I'm like, I love you, buddy. And, you know, and that's how I do it, over and done with in 2 minutes. But then he comes up, and the first few times, I'm telling you, he sat on me afterwards and went into a fetal position and bawled. And he's like, Mommy, I don't mean to hurt your feelings, Mom. And I started to bawl. I was like, honey, I will love you through anything and everything. And I know you love Mom.
So literally, like, that might have been his first attachment moment.
Oh, I'm telling
you. You know, because
I hear look what at I'm that, talking
you, yeah, yeah, you look at the attachment model, like, it's called dyadic attunement. And one of those is like, there's the tear apart, you know, the conflict, and then the co-regulation and the attunement, right? Mm-hmm. And he probably experienced that for one of the first times. Because usually when he lost control, he's gone.
To his bedroom. Isolation.
And then he meant to feel bad and all that stuff. And that is hard. And the fact that you do that and can say that to him, and everyone moves on, you grab a drink, you just chill out, you relax. It's amazing. So even though you deal with that still to this day, all that work, that's still not enough for you. And now you got to do all the stuff at your job.
I'm so grateful for the position that I took with NBAF. I saw a posting, and I have my BACS degree now. So when I saw it, I thought, oh, I might be able to use my education in this position. And one of the prerequisites was they would prefer if you were an adoptive mom, because that's what it's all about, right? So I applied, I got called, I got the job, and then my whole world opened up, and I felt like, wow, there are so many other people going through what I'm going through. I was very isolated going through this adoption and the challenges. No one in my neighborhood was an adoptive parent. Plus, I'm a military family, so I was constantly like moving and relocating. We're retired now in our area, so Connor's had the same home since he's come with us, same physical home. So anyway, when you come to New Brunswick Adoption Foundation, the resources are amazing. And the fact that you get to go through your journeys with all these other people, and then they're learning from you, you're learning from them. It's a peer-to-peer support network. And there's nothing greater than that. Our parents,
to the choir,
like I'm telling you, but our parents and our cousins and people that see our children get dysregulated, and they love them, but they think, I couldn't do that. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they're coming to, oh, do we have to invite him to the party? Because he's going to probably ruin the child's party. How many parties do our kids get invited to? Right. Even if they're family half the time. So,
and even if they do, you don't want to hear your other family members bitch about them or give you parenting advice. You want to throat trap them.
Because everyone, again, thinks our consistency comes across as we're strict and we're rigid. And it's like, wow, do you think that I want to go home and miss the fireworks on Canada Day? Or do you think I have to go home and spend the 2 hours that it takes to get my son to sleep because he needs 9 things? He needs a weighted blanket. He needs a sand machine. He needs his lullabies. He needs the same food every night. Like, do you not think I don't want to have work too? So why would I not be doing this if it wasn't in the best interest of my child?
Yeah.
So respect that, right? Yeah. That's what I ask
for. Hard when people don't know. Yeah.
Unless you live this life, you really don't know.
Agreed. Even if you work it, because I worked it first, it's when you can't go home.
Yes.
That's when the education. Yep.
Yeah. And that's why respite's so important. Mm-hmm. We can get into that. I could talk about that forever, but
okay. Yeah. But so then moving from that, which is fantastic, knowing that now you have a community and you aren't isolated and you're peer to peer, but you kept going, right? Like, so somewhere in that journey, you took the CKS. Awesome.
Yes.
And that's great. But let's talk more about then what do you do support now?
Group. Yeah. Okay. So, through NBAF, I run what the late night talks.
I love it.
So every second Thursday at 8 o'clock, we invite people to join us. And it's been literally full for over 3 years straight since I've been doing it. Every time it's full. So we have a wait list every second Thursday. We have other programs for pre-adoptive, but they're not raising these children yet, right? Children with trauma, children with FASD. I would say that over every single time I run late night talks, over 50% of the people, whether they're foster parents, kinship care providers, former youth in care, pre or post adoptive, that's who we cover, right? Over 50% of them have children in their care that either have suspected FASD or have been diagnosed with FASD. So I get to see and I get to hear the challenges that others are going through. I've conquered some of those challenges, so I can guide them in certain paths and ways.
And just save them so much heartache and headache.
Letting them know about policies, doing all that, letting them know what worked for my son. But when you're on the spectrum, I say, do not give up. You might have to try 25 things, 25 different toothbrushes, different colors. And yes, it's exhausting, but come to us. We're going to pump you up. We're going to listen to you. Sometimes I tear up with them, like I cry with them. Other times I laugh my head off with them because they find humor in some of the things you have to get through it, right? So this peer-to-peer network has grown like crazy. And we're just expanding and expanding. And now here I am at the conference today. I knew you were coming. I was like, okay, I have to go.
Oh, was I the deciding factor?
Fans. I have to say fans, definitely. Like Fetal Alcohol Nova Scotia is the host of it. So of course I want to be part of that. And we're all about working with like-minded organizations.
Not silos, community, right?
Yes. And our vision is to provide permanency for every child in the care of the minister, right? So, but specifically where I have skills with families with FASD, I want to come to anything and everything that I can learn about FASD for the well-being of my family, my son, and the well-being of every other family out there that I can help. So I'm passionate about this. I'm a huge advocate.
There's no doubt.
Huge. And I know my boundaries. I think you have to have boundaries. You have to have that healthy guidelines to say, I can't take all this on today because my son has dysregulated 7 times. He's been on the kitchen floor 7 times screaming and crying. I've had shoes whipped at me. I've been called every name in the book. Okay, I need to take a break.
Yeah, you have to settle.
So we tap, my husband and I. And if you're lucky to have a partner in your home that you can do this with.
Like the pro wrestling hot tag.
That's exactly what it is.
For 8 hours. Yes. And then the other parent's like, all right, take it. And you're like crawling over like they do in wrestling, right?
Yes.
And tap the hand and the other guy comes in full of energy.
You don't say one word.
No.
It literally means I have done what I can right now. You need to step in because it's not fair. And we say this all the time. If you're dysregulated, you can't regulate a child.
Not dysregulated. Ever in the history of the planet.
Yeah. And if you're approaching it from that lens and not from a trauma lens, then what are you teaching them? Like, and we know our children need repetition to the 100th degree, right? So we need to set that example to say, I need a breather. I don't call them timeouts. Yes, I am totally modeling. And I don't call them timeouts. And because I don't believe in isolating when a child's going through an emotional dysregulation, I sit on the floor with them. If they were like, get away from me, I'm right there where I know you're safe and you can see me visually, you know, I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. We call them brain breaks.
Yes.
I call a brain break. I said, yes, it's me, not you, dude. Because he's always the same. And if I'm reacting to what he's doing, I normally don't because I'm rested I got a timeout. And then same thing with him. If he starts to become dysregulated, it was a brain break. And after we got a sensory assessment, he was able to put like lava lamps in his room, all the stuff that would probably make me have a seizure. He loves it. And so he goes into his room and now it's like the zone of regulation. It's his space.
Yeah.
And it's looks and sounds like he needs it. And then 10 minutes later, he's good to go. And when he comes back down, it's not like, so are you ready now?
Mm-hmm.
I remember,
yes.
Do that, right? So it's like, no big deal. Yeah. Okay, cool. You know, and then sometimes, are you ready? No. Okay, more chill. Yep, that's it. Yeah.
And when you call brain breaks, we modeled that. And at school.
Oh, yeah, you took the course.
At school, he gets 6 brain breaks a day.
Yeah.
So the transition time. So we know transitions are usually hard for our children. I said, he goes before the bell. So transition class to class, he gets a brain break. And they're different. So it's laminated on his desk or gets carried. When you're in the older grades, you don't stay in the same homeroom all day. So it's on his book bag, not where everyone else can see it, but he knows it. And he has choices. Does he need a physical brain break or does he need a quiet brain break, a reading brain break? So he takes 6 brain breaks a day to get through his day.
Big time. Right? Yeah. What does your brain need?
Right.
What do you need? Because when he's regulated, he's working, things are good, and it's less meltdowns. And everybody loves that. They don't like to lose control, as you stated. So that is amazing. So you said you're expanding. Does that mean we're coming to New Brunswick next? Are you
conference? I would love that. Yes, I have to keep that under wraps now.
I'm putting that fire in you.
Yes.
And, well, what do you say to people who might be listening and like, I don't have your skills. I'm not confident like that. I don't know what I'm talking about. I feel like I'm failing most of the time.
Well, if you're in New Brunswick, I say, come to me.
Oh, you're like, not.
Come to us. Say? I would say reach out. I would tell them to try your course. Like when you're on Zoom and Jeff has his CKS course, you see, sometimes hundreds, like 80 faces. Yeah. And even though you're in your bedroom, or I was, So I just mean like you're still in your own home, maybe feeling isolated and alone, but just seeing visually. That helped me seeing all these people. And I'm like, wow, like all these families. And I look at all the squares sometimes. Oh, yeah. Yes. And that's what, so I started to just feel through NBAF and through your course, I started to feel like, okay, we have a huge community. And that's unfortunate. I will say it's very unfortunate that we even need this community because FASD is 100%
preventive. Yeah, right? I say that people would rather, like to say, I'm pretty and humble, but parents don't get it twisted. They're here because they're desperate and they want answers.
Yes.
It's not because they want to hang out with some dude from Northern Ontario. I get that, right?
Yes.
But since we're here, we got to do it. Yep. Let's make the best of it.
It has to be support. So you need a wraparound team, right?
You have to have a team. You can't do this on your own. It's impossible almost from a capacity and their needs, you know?
Yeah. So like with Connor, it took, let's say and it is changing. It took approximately 2 years to find the right medication. Didn't change my son's personality. And he still has dysregulation. He still has attachment disorder, a childhood complex PTSD, ADHD. So he has a plethora of diagnoses on top of FASD, but that's a primary diagnosis. So between his med changes and finding out what works for him, between his counseling with an amazing psychologist that thinks outside the box. You have to find the right team for your child. That's what it comes
down to. And but that, like you said, that don't give up after the first few. You have to go because you'll get better at advocating and then someone will say, I get it, or I'm willing to learn.
Yes. Yes. And hold on to those people.
Yes, like, they're the gems. Yeah. You know, gift cards, thank yous, like really, because oftentimes they don't get that, you know, but you are really helpful and they remember that. So when shit hits the fan, they'll go to bat for your family too.
Yes. And with our children, they'll challenge, like, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
you can have anybody in front of them and they will challenge that person. Yeah,
that's the way their brains work.
Exactly.
So that aside, what's next for you? You talked about the expanding. Are you're continuing with your groups and what's going on?
We have different groups, like, you know, for different parts of your journey you're on in adoption and fostering. So we've opened up to fostering in the past year and a half. So we have, of course, a lot of families that are brand new foster parents that are experiencing, you know, symptoms of FASD that they do not understand. So we hire every month, we do free webinars. You can attend them and we pick topics that people are in need of. So we listen to our participants. Yeah. And if they're saying we need more information on FASD, like, we're like, okay, we're going to outsource that. We're going to provide that.
We need information on guardianship. If we need IEP, if we need, so you get on it.
Yes.
And you get, like, you are the curator. You're a disseminator of information fueled by your passion. You put in the work.
But all that being said, it really comes down to that peer-to-peer. It's, you have to have that connection with others. We want our children to connect with us in a healthy way. And look how they're feeling. They get into arguments with their friends all the time. They lose friends all the time. They're not being invited to the birthday parties. They're challenging us and they see us cry sometimes. They're feeling bad about that. I don't want Connor to hate himself. I don't want Connor, as the older he gets, to think that suicide is an option for him. It is one of my biggest fears.
Oh, that's fair.
So I am going to build him up. When he needs it the most is when he's dysregulated the most, because he hates himself after that. That's where the self-harm comes in. That breaks my heart. So when I see the bite marks on his arms and bite marks on his legs, it's because he can't handle his own brain. Well, I'm going to handle it for you. I'll be your executive function. I'm going to be your internal voice that tells you that you are amazing, that you deserve everything everyone else has. And I'm going to be that advocate that fights for everything that you need so that you feel so loved that you'll never think negatively going forward that you shouldn't be on this earth and that you deserve everybody that's in your life. And he doesn't feel that way. And I'm still doing it 8 years later.
I'm ready to run through a fucking wall, dude.
Yeah.
Good. You just got me so jacked.
Yeah. Like, you have to.
We need all of you all the time. Yes. Jim, you're awesome, dude.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Your passion, like, I get fired up. I love talking about it too.
Yeah.
And I love talking to people about it. And you're right. But it's not always easy. That's and building that personal resilience, but connecting with others is the key. Whether it's through you, whether it's through me, whether it's through a local organization, go do your thing.
Yes.
Dude, this was great.
Well, I'm glad you had me.
Thanks for. It was, you know, with the weather and everything else. But yes, I've, you know, followed you for years. Like, you know, every time someone takes the CKS, and I love giving the likes to what people are doing. And that keeps me going.
I promote it.
Your late night talks, I love how you set it up. And so it's not like the family center support group, because apparently, you know, like, you create that environment, that inviting environment.
Yes. Right? I tell people in the description.
Yeah.
It's like going to Tim Hortons and sitting with your best friends.
Just like us.
Yes.
Now we're best buddies.
Exactly. Come in your PJs.
Now me and you are best buddies.
Yep. Yeah. I love it.
Well, I love you.
BFFs.
You're great. Dude, are you going to come back?
Of course.
You'll do this again, huh?
Anytime.
You're the best. Thanks for doing this. Yes, Kim Driscoll, thank you so much for that. Great interview. Lovely lady. Also an alumni, caregiver kickstart. Not a big deal. Okay, let's do a recap real quick. Okay, so
Obviously, she kicked our chat off with a bang. I mean, she was reflecting on the energy of the conference and how she dug my keynote speech. If you haven't heard me speak live or do a live training and you want me to come to your town, your city, your province, your country, hook me up with an email. I'm really good at what I do. You know, it sets the stage, actually, for her dual perspective, right? As both an adoptive mom and a profession in the adoption field. And I love that she shared the personal story about, you know, the sacrifice she even made to be there. It was her son's 13th birthday and all the things that she had to do in order to get to this conference because it was one of the first of its kind in that area. And for people working so hard, I totally get why she did it. And to hear all the cool things she did with the kisses and then the necklace, symbolizing her like just unwavering commitment, you know, to her son amongst all this stuff. It was awesome. But then, right, we got into it and she talked about he was in his 10th home by the time he came to her with two previous adoptions that didn't last. And she talked about the moment she brought him home and he instantly called her mom. And she was weirded out a little bit. She said a red flag, right? Because not only did it reveal his past and all the emotional baggage from multiple home transitions and failed adoptions. So I like how she framed it, not like, uh-oh, here we go, what's going on? But, you know, this poor kiddo. And she felt that mix of emotions of those red flags, but also that deep responsibility to teach him like the true meaning of having a mother's love. She's mentioned that, really showing him what a mother could do. And I know a lot of us might be thinking, you know, I wanted to do that, or I'm doing my best to do that. And I know love isn't the only answer. It's a big piece of the pie, right? Because love and connection is the driving force in relationships and all of this. You could tell she wears her emotions on her sleeve. She felt it. And she's also a fighter, right? Because it came to when her son got into school, fighting for his educational needs. She was a straight up warrior, but she was armed with the facts and policies. And she shared a story that really hit home in that time her son was on the brink of suspension for something small, but Kim wasn't having any of it. So she put together that massive 21-page document, but she was calling on the school for not sticking to their own rules. So she had ammo and she marched into the office and laid it all out and she made them make sense and to see. And her son got the fair shake he needed with the school putting the right place and support and the adjustments that needed to be made. But I get it, right? A 21-page report, you're like, my gosh, man. It might be too much for most of us. But the lesson here is to know your rights and to know the policies when it comes to education. You know, we always say, don't raise your voice, but improve your argument. It's about using the system's language to ensure your kiddo doesn't get overlooked or underserved. And then she talked about what we hear about all the time. You read anything about anything in terms of what helps individuals on the spectrum, and you'll hear structured routines, because routines provide predictability. And she talked about the power of those structured routines and how a steady, predictable day-to-day life keeps her kiddo's world from spinning off its axis. Straight goods. She's got their daily dance, right? Like, it's down to a science. Ensuring that everything from wake-up times to meal plans run like clockwork. This isn't just about keeping peace. She's building a foundation where her kiddo can stand and see, and it provides that solid ground for him. And it also provides predictability, so he knows what to expect next, and he won't be anxious about it. It sucks. Having constant routine sucks because it's boring, and it's important though. She talked about the embracing the grind of a structured routine, and it might be daunting, but it's about that predictability in a world that's often so anything but predictable for our kiddos. And I'm not talking about like military precision, my dudes, but like a rhythm, right? Finding a rhythm that works for your family. It could be a game changer. It really can. And it could turn like uncertainty into understanding. And of course, she was talking about the importance of building a support network. She talked about joining forces with the New Brunswick Adoption Foundation, and that really helped her. But not just finding resources, it was about connecting. connecting with a tribe, a community that gets it, that really understands the roller coaster of raising an individual with fetal alcohol. You know, through both her work and personal experience, she discovered that there's a strength in numbers. And with FASD being 2.5 times more prevalent than autism, I would say we're pretty strong. And she also mentioned sharing a journey with others who are on the same path. It was a major source of support and empowerment for her. Find your tribe, like my dudes, just like Kim did. You know, a lot of people are in our tribe because, you know, if you're listening to me and you like me, there's just more caregivers like me and like attracts like. But I don't care where you find it. Just go find the right one for you. It's not just about having people to talk to. It's about building that network that can offer real practical support. Here's the deal. So, like, reach out. Isolation is the enemy. Whether it's through local groups, your own area group, find an organization. We have our free group, right? Facebook.com/group/FASD forever. Yeah, that's right. She talked about how being involved with others can help lighten the load and remind you that you're not alone in this fight. And from what my parents tell me, you can listen to other people's issues and be like, wow, I'm glad that's not me. That's legit a thing. Okay, but she also talked about public behavior, right? Public symptoms. She recounted an incident where her son was in public and where the environment was just too overwhelming for him. She noticed, though, the early signs of distress, and then she jumped in. So the precipitating factors. She didn't want the situation to escalate. So she described how, like, she intervened with calm, collected demeanor, acknowledging her son's feelings, and helping him, like, navigate through the overwhelming stimulation. And she also talked about understanding her son's triggers is crucial. For instance, she knows that crowded places or loud noises could cause him distressed. So she's always ready with a strategy to help him cope or to get the F out of Dodge if it's necessary. So it's like a mix of preparation, like knowing the environment they're going into and the responsive strategies. So you know the environment. You know, the precipitating factors. Like for my guy, it was when he'd tell me, why do we have to do this? This is stupid. When he started talking like that, I knew it. I knew it. So, and then I was like, can you be able to redirect their attention or providing reassurance when you're scared and you get overwhelmed and we get those flood of emotions. So like the key takeaway is being proactive rather than reactive when managing these public symptoms. It's about creating a safety net of strategies, because not all things work at the same time, right? It's about reducing stress for both of you guys. Being proactive helps not only managing the immediate situation, but you're also modeling coping mechanisms that could be applied in the future when your kids can see it. They can draw the parallel to the strategy you're using. And it's best to even talk about that further when you're like driving home or when the situation is calmer, about the connection of using strategies, using calming tactics, because individuals on the spectrum aren't always able to generate self-strategy. Listen, she talked about self-sanity and resilience, talked about the intense challenges of managing her kiddos when he's dysregulated. And she described days where her sons would have multiple dysregulations, leading to him screaming and crying on the floor, throwing shoes, calling her names. But they taught her the critical importance of self-sanity and setting boundaries. She talked about the necessity of knowing when to tap out, let the husband step in if you have a spouse or a partner or somebody who can. You know, I kind of talked about the pro wrestling hot tag, where one partner takes over when the other one's exhausted. Straight up, the tag team approach when you're dealing with this ensures that both of y'all maintain resilience, preventing burnout, resentment, all that stuff. She also was, of course, celebrated his interest, right? Like, she lit up when talking about her son's love for football, like American football, because we have people all over the world that listen to this, and we love you for it. It wasn't a sport for him. It was a way for him to connect, feel competent, and boost his self-esteem. She tried other things like beavers, soccer, skating, but none clicked until football entered the scene. She said it was like an aha moment seeing her son, who struggled with big time insecurity and anxiety, find something that made him feel good about himself. His anxiety, which has become more crippling as he grew older, found a counterbalance and focus, so he was able to bring it to the football field. So you can hear her pride in his interest. It's about recognizing and nurturing what makes your kids tick, what gives them confidence, what reduces their anxieties. Like celebrating strength and interest isn't just about making them happy. It's a strategic move, man, because what it does is fosters a positive self-image, encourages personal growth amid all these shitty challenges your kiddos have to deal with. It's a blueprint, right? For you and for your kid that lights them up, and just use that as a stepping stone. And in that, their strengths and what they like to do is where we're able to build the skills. And she didn't hold back when she discussed her worries about her son's future. And those concerns are palpable, especially the fear of what might happen when you're no longer there to take care of them, right? She opened up about the scary thought of him lacking security and the same question we all have. What does this look like after when she's gone? So like this interview really dug deep, man. And the future is a big looming question and it's marked with uncertainties. But she's building a family, her military family, a family of non-bio ties to create that support network for her son. So she acknowledges his challenges, man. And she knows that his social struggles have led to burnt bridges in their neighborhood. But she's got that proactive approach and established a safety net for her son. And I know Kim isn't the only one lying awake at night worrying about the future. Many of you do. Many of our listeners do, and you do. And it's a heavy load. And you're wondering, what's down the road for our kids, right? What am I going to do? What is my kid going to do when I die? But here's the thing, friends. It's in these quiet, tough moments that we find our true strength and purpose. So Kim's journey shows us it's not about facing the challenges today, but slowly stack building for a good tomorrow, right? Where our kids have a fighting chance no matter what. And even if, right? Even if the school's talking shit to you, saying that your kid is fine at school and you know it's a different story at home. Even if your siblings with FASD are like lightning rods when they're in the same freaking room, sparking off each other in ways that like light up the night sky and your blood pressure. Even if everyone around you is tossing out those fun little effing comments about how you're doing it all wrong. And even if you're struggling with connecting with your spouse, feeling like you're on a separate planet sometimes rather than on the same team, you're gonna keep going. You wanna know why? Because you're still flipping listening to me right now. You keep showing up, you keep trying, and yeah, you probably keep crying, at least for a bit. Because let's face it, man, it's hard. But guess what? Everything is gonna be okay. You don't have to do this alone. Lean on with the professionals and the parents. Share on this show. Join our group. Get into our tribe. Let the wisdom and experience light the way to making things better for you, having more good days. You're doing your best. And if you're finding it tough to see that, well, I see it. I see the effort, the love, the grit, and the sheer fucking willpower you bring to each day, my guy. You're more than just handling it. You're doing your best to steer this shit show of a ship with courage, even amongst the roughest weather. And that is everything. So keep pushing forward. Do not stop. Do not quit. I love you. I love your face. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. Let's keep it up. Let's keep going. And we'll see you back here at the same time, same channel. You're the best. I love you. Bye.